For the next several Rain Hamcast podcasts, we're conducting an experiment that may affect you whether you're narrowcasting this audio service on Simplex or a network that requires more frequent pauses. This Rain podcast will provide a 6-second break every 3 minutes, plus or minus timer pause, for those who need to unkey to reset a timer. Your input will determine whether we continue with the customary ID break before 10 minutes or the timer breaks every 3 minutes. You'll have two Rain podcast formats. Choose the one you would prefer we use, the one with the customary break every 10 minutes or the timer format that will pause every 3 minutes, plus or minus. We'll check the stats after 3 weeks to determine what format we should use, or maybe both if they're demanded. This is a Rain Extra, Bob Breninga, WB4APR, A Ham with Direction, Silent Key. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR. For you who use APRS, Automatic Packet Reporting System, February 7th, 2022, will remain a sad day, as that's the day Bob Breninga, WB4APR, became a silent key. The amateur radio newsline reported thusly.
A pioneer in the development of APRS has become a silent key. With those details, here's Neil Rep, WB9VPG.
The developer of the Automatic Packet Reporting System, or APRS, has become a silent key. Bob Breninga, WB4APR, died on Monday, February 7th, according to a post on AMSAT's Facebook page, quoting his daughter, Beth Ann. He had been battling cancer for 2 years and was also diagnosed with COVID-19, according to the post. More than a quarter century ago, Bob developed the now widely used packet radio technology that enables real-time tracking over ham frequencies. Bob, a U.S. Navy veteran, had also been senior research engineer at the U.S. Naval Academy's Small Satellite Lab in Annapolis, Maryland. He was the author of the book Energy Choices for the Radio Amateur, published by ARRL. Bob wrote on his QRZ page that his ham radio journey began in 1963 with the novice call sign WN4APR. He was a life member of the AMSAT organization and belonged to the IEEE National Committee on Transportation and Aerospace Policy. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Neil Rapp, WB9VPG.
In memory and respect to a ham radio visionary, the Radio Amateur Information Network presents an encore replay of Bob's 2018 Dayton Hamvention talk, A Whole New World of Energy. Here's our lengthy excerpt from that talk, originally aired July 21st, 2018, on the Rain Report.
You probably recognize me from APRS. APRS has been around for 25 years. Now I plan on spending the rest of my life on this planet trying to wake people up to the fact that we got a whole new energy system out there. Not only is it clean, renewable, but it's also cheaper. To me, energy now is more than a hobby. You see my solar-powered car, my solar field day, my house. My background is built my first Hamfest generator in 1965, 2 years after I got my license, and that was by rewinding a 12-volt generator to make it a 120-volt alternator. 1970, my senior project at Georgia Tech was an electric car. 1983, I was able to buy the first full production electric vehicle in America called the City Car, and it's still in my backyard. It's actually got trees coming up and out the windows. In 2007, I finally got back to electric cars. You couldn't buy them, but you could buy salvage Priuses and convert them to all electric. And then in 2010, I started accumulating solar panels, eventually went to a heat pump and kept collecting Priuses. I'm concerned for our future. 6 solar panels costing about $1,200 will fully charge a Prius plug-in car every day forever. Talk about independence from foreign oil, independence from price fluctuations. It's just unbelievable. 8 years ago when I first started this, you know, we were spending $2 billion a day for foreign oil. And now I don't even need it. Moving on, it's a whole new world of power. It's not 60 hertz power anymore. Nobody buys a boat anchor power supply unless somebody gives it to you. Switching power supply now takes up 8% of the space and 10% of the mass, and it'll run on anything from about 80 volts to 330 volts DC, 100 to 240 volt AC. Unbelievable variety of power inputs. And the reason is because every DC switching supply, which everything is if it doesn't have a 60 hertz transformer, goes straight into a bridge rectifier the bridge rectifier, and it's a universal supply, so it'll take 100 to 240 volts AC. When you rectify 240 volts AC, what do you get? 330 volts DC. What I'm saying is 330 volts DC is the new common power that's out there that you can tap into, whether it's solar, whether it's from a hybrid, or whether it's from the mains. I tried writing an article for QST, but they will not accept it because anything over 12 volts, they're worried about telling people how to do it. Now, you guys, looks like most of you are old enough to remember a tube transmitter. 300 volts was the minimum voltage, and we didn't die. My Cub Scout Lion badge for a Cub Scout, everybody built a two-tube radio with 300-volt batteries. And that's an 8-year-old kid. And now we can't talk about anything over 12 volts. Here's a Kenwood. We know it's a switching supply because it doesn't weigh a ton. It's 25 amps, but it's only labeled 115 volts on the back, but you know they sell them in Europe. So you take the cover off, and sure enough, there's a jumper in there. You remove that, and then it operates on 240 volts. So if something is labeled 100 to 240 volts AC, you can guarantee that it'll probably work on DC. If it's labeled only 115 or it has a switch, you got to go to the 240 volt position in order to be able to go in directly on that rectifier. Because you see, if the jumper is in place, you're going to bring 300 volts DC into the center tap of the two voltage doubling capacitors, and they're only rated at 200 volts to save money. Instead of giving a single 400-volt capacitor, they give you two 200 volts, and so you burn out that electrolytic. But again, if it says 240 volts AC, then 330 volts DC will do just fine. Anything all the way down to 80 volts. I took every one of the laptop power supplies that I had in my lab, 15 of them. I plugged every single one of them into 70 volts DC, and every one of them gave full-rated output. Now, I'm not saying that they would do that forever, because remember, as the voltage goes down, the current goes up. And I think that those things are probably not rated to continuously operate at full load down at that low voltage, because you're putting in almost four times the current. But anyway, just recognize there's a lot of potential. As hams, our dream has always been to have a big 10 kW generator out there in the driveway. And my experience with all my generators all my life is they never work when I need them. And I always maintain my own engines, and I am getting tired of that. Absolutely cannot stand. Well, you know, it snows. I got a snowblower that can do the whole neighborhood. I spend the whole first day of the snowstorm trying to get the thing to crank, you know. So anyway, I'm pretty anti-generators, because think of this. In Maryland, they guarantee 99.96% reliable power. Work that out, that's 4 hours a year. The average American home draws 1 kW, 4 hours. That's 4 kilowatt hours at 10 cents a kilowatt hour. That's 40 cents worth of electricity that you're going to lose per year, and you're going to spend $10,000 for that 4 hours of electricity. The reason I stopped doing generators is I drive a hybrid, and a hybrid, of course, has a 50,000 watt generator in it. The auto industry has not recognized, you know, with all these hurricanes and everything else and disaster and emergency power, and everybody's worried about power, and yet out in your driveway, you got 50,000 watts, and they just haven't given you the $300 DC to DC converter to give you access to that power. Imagine the sales that they could make if they would just do that. So I did it on my Prius, tapped into both the 220-volt battery. The problem is, go try to find an inverter that takes 300 volts input DC and gives you 120 volts 60 hertz output.
You're listening to the first of two excerpts from a 2018 Dayton Hamvention presentation about a whole new world of energy, voiced by the man behind APRS, Bob Breninga, WB4APR. We'll continue Bob's enthusiastic talk in a moment. This is the Rain Report.
When you have a battery backup UPS system, they always want to minimize the number of lead acid batteries you have, so they only will operate at 24 or 36. 48, maybe up as high as 6 batteries for 72 volts, but there's just not a market out there for the 300 volt ones. Since I've been talking about this for 8 years, now there's guys in China, of course, that are making them, and so they take a standard 3 kW backup UPS and just rewind the input to operate on 200 to 250 volts input, and now, I don't remember how much it costs, but you put that in the trunk of your Prius, and now you've got access to that 10 kW. It's a 50 kW generator, but that's with the four-cycle engine running wide open. It's really, I assume you could get about 10 kW average power out of it without too much hassle. But of course, that takes up a lot of room in the trunk. So all I have is a little 1,200-watt modified sine inverter in the back by the tail light. It's back there because that's where the battery is. A little 12-volt battery is what the Prius runs off of. And you could put a 2kW, 3kW inverter there because you're drawing from the 12-volt battery, but not very long. But remember, the beauty of the hybrid is that all hybrids have a high voltage to 100-amp 12-volt DC to DC converter to power all the accessories. All the accessories and all these modern electric and hybrids are still 12 volts. And so worst case, snow, all the blowers are going, the rain, the windshield wipers, all that stuff, they usually provide 100 amps at 14 volts to keep the battery charged. So I can draw kilowatts out of the 12-volt battery, but if I'm drawing more than that 100 amps that's being replaced by the high-voltage system, I'm going to be running my 12-volt battery down. So it turns out that although it's providing 100 amps from the high voltage system, it's been studied that you need to keep your long-term load below about 850 watts because as soon as you draw more than 850 watts, the voltage on your 12-volt battery is dropping below 14 volts and you're no longer maintaining it at a full charge. Running this way, drawing 1kW, you can run for about a week on 8 gallons of gas, a tank. Fantastic backup power supply, and especially because you use it every day, you know it works, and you just plug into it. And you say, of course, well, but any car can provide this kind of power from 12 volts. Yeah, but only if the engine's running. The advantage of the hybrid is that the hybrid will take care of the 12-volt system, and you don't even have to think about it. You leave it in ready mode, and you can just leave it there for a week, and the engine will start up whenever it needs to maintain the charge on the battery, and when the battery's full, it'll shut down, and so the car will cycle entirely on its own. And so instead of at night having to go out and shut off the generator to go to sleep in the rain and the storm, you just go to sleep. The hybrid will go to sleep, and it'll wake up the next morning when you turn on the toaster. So back in 2014, there's over 60 models of hybrids to choose from, and almost every car is becoming a hybrid these days, or you can get a hybrid model. But if you really want to carry some power, think of an electric car. The typical hybrid battery is only 1 to 2 kilowatt hours. That's not much more than a 12-volt battery, a big 12-volt marine battery. The Nissan Leaf has a 16-kilowatt-hour battery, and, of course, the Tesla has an 85-kilowatt-hour battery. And with an average power draw of the average American home of 1kW, look how long that's going to run for you. And people say, well, yeah, but where are you going to get your electricity during a grid blackout? Well, where are you going to get your gas during a grid blackout? Remember all the gas lines during Hurricane Sandy and everything else? But Toyota and Nissan in Japan do provide whole house interfaces to their electric car. So you plug it in, you charge, and whenever you lose power, the house runs on the car. Turns out that's a solar house, so you know when the grid goes down, he's still got the power, still powers whole house, and he's got the energy storage in the battery that he drives every day. So people think that gasoline is the ideal power support. Look at Puerto Rico. You spend all your time trying to get gas, and you got no power. The other thing, remember Sandy? Disaster on the East Coast in New Jersey and Long Island. But this satellite image on the left is the normal. Everything's fully lit. One on the right is in the middle of the blackouts of Hurricane Sandy, and you see that there's still lights on in New Jersey. There's still lights on Long Island, just not as many. So if when the grid goes down, you're depending on your electric vehicle for power, all you got to do is look around for some lights and go over and ask to plug in. I'll get back to that asking somebody else to plug in topic in a minute. Oh, and I'm sorry. One thing I wanted to mention is we have this electric vehicle up here. I walked all the way through the flea market to see if I could find an electric car to buy. A few minutes before this talk, I stumble on this guy selling this electric bicycle. It's a fantastic machine. And so I said, hey, bring it in here. You want to do a loop around over there and back while I'm talking? It has a 20-amp-hour, 36-volt battery. It'll run 20 miles a day. And remember, I showed the 6 solar panels can fully power a Prius every day forever. One solar panel can power this thing 20 miles every day forever, the rest of your life. Talk about unlimited power. It's a whole new world of energy. We are now at the point where EVs are better, cleaner, faster, cheaper to buy, cheaper to operate, and cheaper to maintain than gas cars. And yet you'll talk to the average guy on the street and he'll say they're too expensive. That was true up until 2013. In 2013, they broke even. And now the average cost of all 40 of those EVs on the market is $7,000 less than the average cost of all gas cars sold in America. You can refuel at home, independence from oil, no emissions, 0 to 60 in 2.3 seconds. Now you buy the right car to do what you want it to do. My energy reawakening started in 2007 when, again, I wanted an electric car. And the only thing you could do then was to modify a Prius. And I found I could get salvaged Priuses for about a couple of $1,000s. Most of what people think they know about electric cars is simply misinformed. You can look at all these excuses you hear. Not one of them is right in the right context. 90% of the transportation energy we consume is local. And that's what we're trying to solve with electric cars. We're not saying electric cars can do everything by any means. We're not going to take away your truck or anything else. But for 90% of that time you're driving your truck around at 15 miles per gallon, are you really hauling a two-ton load? Not only in the last 8 years are we up to now 40 full-size electric cars available on the market, in the next 7 years there will be hundreds, because Volvo has committed to all of their vehicles will be electrified by 2019. That's 1 year away. Now, when I say electrified, that does not mean it's full battery electric. That means it's a hybrid electric or a plug-in electric. GM, 10 models in China in 2 years from now. Mercedes-Benz, all models will be electrified in 4 years. Ford, more than half, including the F-150, you'll be able to buy a plug-in hybrid version of that. Nissan, 12 new EVs by 2022. Hyundai, 2022. BMW, 25 models by 2025. And VW Group, 80 models. VW, Porsche, all their specialty bottles. And they're building 16 new plants to make 3 million cars a year. We're at 40 cars now, and in 7 years from now, it'll be unusual to buy a gas car. And here's the problem with buying a gas car. The average car in America stays on the road for 18 years. So if you go out and buy a big gas guzzler today, it's going to be 18 years before that thing is finally scrapped. And that's long past the time that we've been worrying about what we're doing to our atmosphere. And how much are you going to be able to resell that for in 5 years when the going thing on the market is electric cars? But we just need to make sure that everybody is informed when they go to buy a car. Be informed of what is available in the electric market and the hybrid market. I took that one sheet list that we used to publish, and I put all the battery electrics on one page, and I drew a line near the bottom, which is the average cost of the average gasoline car in America, which is $35,000. And you see that 80% of all full-size battery electric cars on the market today cost less than the average gas car. I took the plug-in hybrids, drew the line, and here about 45% of all the plug-in hybrids are cheaper than the average American gas car. Now, I'm talking averages. Sure, you can go buy a four-wheel thing from China that can get you around for less than $35,000, but Americans don't buy them. They're spending $60,000 for a pickup truck.
You're getting a crash course on electric vehicles voiced by Bob Breninga, WB4APR, the man who revolutionized amateur radio tracking with his automated packet reporting system, APRS, back in the 1990s. We'll conclude our sojourn into the modern electric vehicle in a moment. This is the Rain Report.
You're listening to the Rain Report from www.therainreport.com.
You can argue about averages all you want. And the reason is that the EVs are just going to take over the market is it's only got one moving part in the engine, and it costs less to operate and costs much less to maintain. This is a point I like to make. A battery is not a tank. A tank is something you use to empty and then fill up once a week or so. And so you're concerned about being able to drive all week before you have to fill up again, so you think about range. A battery is something you use and charge, use and charge, use and charge, use and charge. You use it while you're driving it, and you charge it while you're parked. Complete paradigm shift. Remember I talked about, ask your neighbor to plug in your electric car, and he says, well, it cost him $40 to fill up his little sedan gas tank, and he thinks, well, you plug in that you're just going to run up his electric bill by $40. No, 14 cents a kilowatt hour, which is what we pay. It's basically 20 cents an hour to charge an electric car. And if you do an 8-hour charge at 20 cents an hour, it's about $1.60 a day. And that's if you go the full 40 miles every single day. So that's one of the things I want to get changed, is the perception of the cost of electricity for electric cars, so that when you do get stuck on the road, and yeah, somebody's going to let you plug in, but they're going to be thinking, this is going to cost me a lot of money. Now you say, here's $2 for it. And they'll say, go away. Every EV can charge from a standard 120-volt outlet. And you hear all this stuff about public charging and high-speed chargers and everything else. If you buy an electric car with the idea of public charging, you don't understand an electric car. An electric car is for local travel. You plug it in while it's parked. You'd be crazy to take it on a trip. And then Tesla came out and says, no, forget that. We're going to drive them on trips, and we're going to give you free electricity all the way across. So Tesla kind of upset the boat of saying electric cars are absolutely perfect for everything local, commuting and everything else. And Tesla saying, yeah, but you can drive them across country too. So anyway, remember, even a Tesla can plug from a standard 120-volt outlet. People say, well, it takes a long time. Well, I don't know about you, but I sleep. I'd like to sleep 8 hours a day, and that's enough to pick up 50 miles on any electric car plugged into a standard wall outlet. Most charging is going to be residential at home, but where else are cars parked most of the time? They're at home and at work. You do both of those, that's 97% of the daily miles of everybody in America if you just plug in at home and at work. And that's from a standard 120-volt power outlet. Yes, there are a lot of public chargers in shopping centers and malls to try to get EVs rolling. But again, I wouldn't plan on plugging in there because right now only 1% of the drivers are driving electric cars. As soon as you get up to 30%, you're not going to find an empty charger. But that's not a concern for me because, again, you plug in while you're parked. Once a month, I might go out of my daily range someplace, okay? Does it make sense? Back when the Tesla first came out, you could get the 250-mile battery for a $120,000 car. You could buy exactly the same car for only $70,000 with the smaller battery with only 150-mile range. You just spent $50,000 for the ability to save 20 minutes on the way to New York City once a month. That's not cost effective in my book. People think they want the longest range battery, and I say that is absurd. You want the smallest battery that does your daily need. And if you need to go beyond that, drive a hybrid or borrow your wife's car. That's a very good point. Take the train. Everybody is so up on this high-speed charging. The state of Maryland, their assessment, they did a big study, you know, they're a progressive state. 0.3% of the charging needs to be high-speed charging. And it only needs to be along the interstate because all the rest of the time, the cars are parked. This is what GM used way back in the early days. It shows 7 days a week across the bottom, 24 hours a day going up. And we only use our cars about 20% of the time. In a gas car, that's when you've got to refuel. That's why you're so focused on the inconvenience of refueling, is because you always have to do it when you're on your way somewhere. An electric vehicle never even thinks about it because he just goes out and does his things, come home, plugs in. Every time he gets in the car, it's fully charged. Nissan is now 10 years or 8 years, and for the longest time, they said, we will always guarantee that you could replace the battery for $5,000. Now, compared to a $3,000 transmission job, that's, you know, the same ballpark. Now they're saying they'll do it for $2,500. Now, that's a rebuilt thing, just like a rebuilt transmission. But the cost of the battery is not really an issue. The costs are coming down. Oh, and you know, 8 years from now, imagine how cheap the battery will be to replace the one you have if you had to. There are Chevy Volts with 350,000 miles on them and still on the original battery. Generally, the electric car manufacturers will claim, and they're mostly right, that there have been no long life failures yet to date. There have been a lot of early failures because of manufacturing issues and everything, all under warranty and so forth. And then there was the issue of the Nissan batteries down in Tucson, where they get to 160 degrees in the shade, and they wore those out. Generally, they're lasting as long as they said they would, as long as they're not abused. But anyway, so the gas car has to refuel while they're using it. You've got all the rest of this time to do it, and most of that time is parked at home or at work or at school. And if we just get to the concept of put a 120-volt outlet by every parking spot where a car is going to be for 8 hours or so, charging is solved. So I say public charging is only a security blanket. It's like carrying a spare gallon in your gas tank, in your gas car. And every place you see an outdoor outlet, ask the owner, hey, would you consider putting up an electric vehicle charging sign? You've got an electric vehicle charging station. Don't you want to attract customers? And remember, the load of an electric car plugged in 120 volts is just the standard 1.5 kW. It's only 12 amps from a standard 15-amp outlet. That's the way electric cars are designed, never to draw more than 12 amps from a 15-amp outlet. So they're not going to shut your house down or whatever you plug into. Also, remember, if you charge at home and you have a place you can plug it to work, now you've just doubled the range of your short-range electric car. I talked about the pure battery electrics. Most of those plug-in hybrids are only going to have 25, 30-mile range because you got the gas backup. So why not just put enough battery in there to do most of what you do every day on battery, and don't worry about it. The Prius plug-in has a 600-mile range when you include the gas, and you don't even notice the transition between the two. You know, it just uses battery and said, oh, you want to go further, and you got another 600 miles on the gas tank. But anyway, if you can plug in at home and work, remember, you can double the range of your car because you got 8 hours at home and 8 hours there. When you double your range, you quadruple your territory by four. Anyway, going renewable energy is easy. I started back in 2007 when I bought that first Prius, and then the second Prius. Then I put up my first solar panels. And in our state, you can sign up for wind just by checking a box on your utility bill and say, I want all my power to come from renewables. And it costs a fraction of a penny more. But what's the purpose of buying an electric car except to stop dumping stuff into our atmosphere by clean energy. So then the biggest one was the 1,000 gallons of heating oil I was burning, put in a geothermal heat pump. I used to spend $6,000 a year on energy when you add up the oil, the electricity, the fact that I had incandescent lights, they had three cars and three kids, three other drivers besides me, $1,500 a year on gasoline, $6,000 a year on energy. Now I spend $300 because everything comes from solar. That started in 2010. And notice I have exactly the date. The third Saturday in August in 2010 is when I finally had the duh moment and realized this whole modern revolution about solar power is because of grid tie. You don't have to have batteries for storage. You know, I'm a ham. I always want to have batteries in the basement. I hate having batteries in the basement. They're always discharged. You're always messing with them, you know. So anyway, when you get rid of the battery, it's just a revolution. No moving parts, nothing to wear out. Solar cost has come down 100-to-1 since I was a kid. And they were predicting that it would be cheaper than coal by 2020. We passed that point in 2015. Electricity from solar is now cheaper than coal.
And that concludes our excerpt from a 2018 Dayton Hamvention talk by Bob Breninga, WB4APR, who put the ham radio tracking world on its ear in the mid-1990s with his APRS automatic packet reporting system. Sadly, as reported by the Amateur Radio Newsline, Bob Breninga, WB4APR, became a silent key February 7th, 2022. The Rain Extra is copyright 1985-2022 Rain, all rights reserved. Rain programming is made available under a Creative Commons license. You are encouraged to download, share, post, and transmit this Rain Extra in its entirety via amateur radio. Just don't forget to identify your station every 10 minutes. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, and this has been a Rain Extra.